WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. I confess, I think some makeover shows are fun and occasionally instructive. They're big hits in England as well as America. In fact, one of the popular BBC shows, What Not to Wear, is the basis of a show of the same name on the Learning Channel. My guests Trini Woodall and Susanna Constantine are the hosts of the British What Not to Wear. It's seen here on BBC America. Woodall and Constantine have a book of the same name that's just been published in paperback. Here's how the show works. A woman who is totally lacking in fashion sense is nominated by family and friends for a makeover. Woodall and Constantine ambush the woman and tell her she's been chosen for the show and that she's been secretly filmed so that she and we can get a good look at her fashion problems. Then the hosts go through the woman's closet with her, demonstrate how awful her clothes are, throw the biggest offenders in a trash can, and give her £2,000 to buy a new wardrobe with their help. The hosts say they need to be cruel to be kind. Here's a scene in which Woodall and Constantine are working with a middle-aged woman, watching the secret footage they shot of her.
How much black do you wear?
Quite a bit.
You do, don't you? Mm-hmm. Can you see how that black is making you look really tired and enhancing your dark circles under your eyes?
But it's making me look slimmer.
It's not making you look slimmer. It's making you look like you've got jaundice.
You know, actually, cut is what makes you look slimmer.
Oh, my God.
You are out in public. You are in a supermarket. You look like you're wearing a sack. Shame on you, woman.
But that's comfortable, Seth.
Oh. If you only had comfortable clothes that were flattering for you, you'd never go to that kind of shoddiness.
The goal of these makeovers isn't to turn the woman into a Vogue magazine cover. I asked Susanna Constantine what their goal is.
It's really important for us to look at a woman's lifestyle as well as the way she looks physically. So we take into account whether she's got children, what kind of job she has, where she wants to go, whether she wants to get the man, whether she wants to get the divorce, whether she wants to get the job. And then we look at her figure and we make her understand what she loves and hates about her body. And we explain that, you know, she doesn't need to go on the diet, she doesn't need to have surgery, she doesn't need to exercise. She can make a huge difference by wearing the right clothes today, here and now. And, you know, that the whole point is kind of like an emotional journey. It's very entertaining, the show. But the whole point is for her to feel better about herself at the end of the experience. And that's what we want. And that's what we really get the pleasure from doing.
You know what I was wondering? If a lot of, like, husbands who have no clue about how to dress and have, you know, awful haircuts and really old eyeglass frames are complaining to you about how their wives look.
It's not really, I mean, more often than not, it's kind of really good girlfriend or a female family member that's nominated them. And sometimes it is the husband, but generally when it's the husband, if he is a kind of spotty little nerd, he is nominating his wife through love because he feels that she really needs a break. We have had, you know, a few disillusioned men who have nominated their partners because they think that they do need to look better, but really, in actual fact, they're the ones who should be looking at themselves at the end of the day. And that's quite evident in the show. It's like by the end of the show, you know, the woman has moved on to such a level that this poor bloke has been left behind. And we had one instance where a really sweet couple, and the husband nominated the wife, and along with her sister, his sisters, the ugly sisters, and who should have been on our show. And by the end of it, Maria looked so wonderful, and Matthew, the husband, was left behind. And he felt really gutted that his wife had now become this sort of glamorous icon in his eyes. And she then nominated him for the show, and we made him over. And by the end of that, they were level pegging, and it was a very happy ending to the story.
You're afraid they would have gotten divorced had you not done the makeover for him afterwards?
No, I just think it was very charming with him as a man, because we all know, you know, as women, we can discuss issues of how we feel about our bodies quite openly. And I think men, it's more taboo. And this man was a quite a large man. And I remember he said this comment to Suzanne. He said, I feel like, you know, the big fat man at the back of the pub. And he was quite emotional and expressive. So it was amazing to you know, dress him so that he felt that he'd lost, like, you know, 50 pounds. And he felt handsome, he felt sexually attractive, all the things that had just gone from his life.
People show you their wardrobes before you make them over. And there are some pretty horrible garments in the wardrobes of the women that you choose. After all, that's why you chose them in the first place. And you throw the things that you don't like from their closets into a big trash can. Sometimes you basically throw the whole closet in there and you keep like one item that you think is passable. Do you actually like give the clothes back to the woman afterwards, or do you like cart it off?
Those clothes are gone for good.
They're really in the dumpster for good, huh?
No, they really are. They're gone for good. And by the, you know, that is the kind of greatest hurdle to get over for a woman, because, you know, there's a lot of emotional attachment to some of these clothes, you know, these items of clothing. It might be, you know, the dress that they wore on their first date, or, you know, the cardigan they wrapped their new puppy in when it arrived. And but by the end of the process, they're actually very willing to get rid of their clothes.
But gee, shouldn't they be hanging on to those things for sentimental reasons?
No, why? What's so good about the sentimentality of that?
That's like having a photograph or something, you know, it's the same thing.
I mean, some people do have items, and then what they do is they end up framing them and hanging them on the wall, which is quite amusing. but what they can do, we sometimes make three piles. We make the pile to give to friends that you shopped with who suit, you know, those clothes suited them a lot better than they ever suited you. Then we have a sort of resale pile where they can, you know, get some money back and sell them in a secondhand store. And then we have the kind of two disgusting to even give to any one pile, and those do go in the trash.
And here's the problem I run into when I clean out my closet. I look at that big, ugly, but warm sweater, and I say to myself, I could get rid of this because it's kind of too ugly to wear. But if there's war or famine, I'll really want the warmth of this sweater, and I won't care that it's ugly.
That is so extreme,
isn't it?
You must have the gas mask. You must have the
no.
Bunker,
I have none of that. I have nothing. I have nothing.
I can't believe that.
I just have this incredible guilt about getting rid of clothes.
Yeah, but you know, someone else out there less fortunate than you maybe could really benefit from those clothes. So maybe give it to charity, and then you know that some...
That is what I do.
Well, that's the way to go. And then someone else who doesn't even have a roof over their head will benefit from your warm jersey. Yeah.
They'll have the good clothes if there's a war.
Yeah,
exactly.
You'll freeze.
That's right. What are some of the biggest offenders that you typically trash? The offenders that show up in the most closets?
I think the universal offender is the pleated, tapered, chino-type trouser, which is very high-waisted.
Are you wearing those now, Tammy?
I am not, no.
Good girl. and they are something that, you know, offends every woman's shape. So if you have a flabby tummy and you have that kind of pleated high-waisted trouser, your stomach will just begin to resemble a waterbed. And if you have hips and you have these trousers, then all you look at when you see a woman's shape who has bigger hips is the width of her hips, because the trouser is so tapered at the bottom towards the ankle that it distorts your leg. If you have a big butt, high-waisted trousers, especially sans pockets at the back, will just make your bottom so huge that people will just be staggered by it.
Our lovely lady engineer, who we can see through the window giggling, is looking at her own pair of trousers. Yeah. And I think she's going to take them off in a minute and put them in the trash can.
So what are some of the other typical offenders that you find in women's closets?
Well, something that is actually stronger in America than in England are the same thing in a short. And you have much better weather here. But, you know, walking down the streets of New York in the last few days, we have seen many women who could be, you know, 16 or could be 60, and they wear shorts, chino shorts. And they're like a men's short, you know, and they're kind of wider than they are long, with probably double the amount of pleats. And that is just the most unflattering thing for a woman.
It's so unfeminine. There's nothing appealing about those shorts. And there are so many alternatives out there. Why not just wear a skirt? Skirt is much cooler. You don't get a sweaty gusset. You know, it's like let the air get up up your in between your legs. You know, it's much cooler to wear a skirt. Women are very fortunate. Men, it's harder. So men, you know, for men, shorts are a good alternative as long as they don't have the pleats at the front and they're more like a Bermuda short, they can get away with it.
Susanna's hair has been very quiet. I'm wondering if she's got some
hair. She's
No, no, I'll tell you what I was thinking, though. Here's what I'm thinking. Mm-hmm. I'm one of the people who, like, never wear skirts. I always feel like...
What's wrong with your legs?
It's not even a question of hiding my legs. It's that I feel like I walk differently and I sit differently, and it's somehow I don't feel me in a skirt.
So are you scared of being feminine?
I wouldn't say I'm scared of being feminine, but I think I just tend to wear more like shirts and jackets and pants, and
so you feel more comfortable to be androgynous.
I don't think it's quite androgynous, but
do you wear dresses?
Nah.
Okay.
No.
We need to get our hands on Terry. That's the bottom line. We need any of Terry's friends who are listening to this show. Mm-hmm. When we come out to America, please nominate her, because it sounds like we need to get our hands on her.
No, but why should I have to wear a skirt or a dress or look, quote, feminine?
Well, unless you have legs like mine, which Susanna says boots were invented for because my calves and ankles are so thick, I think that... And also, can I ask you, Terry, how tall are you?
I'm really short. I'm about 5 feet.
Another little point with that is that when you are shorter, if you wear a neat skirt, you look taller than if you wear trousers sometimes.
What do you mean by a neat skirt? Do you mean...
I don't mean like a huge A-line rah-rah skirt, okay, which would just wear you, because I think the shorter one is, you have to be quite neat with your clothes. But if you always wear trousers, and if you wore a neat little jacket nipped in, quite, you know, showing off your figure, that might be okay. But I somehow think that's not the kind of jacket you wear. I do feel it's more of a men-shaped blazer that you might wear. Tell me if I'm wrong, though.
I don't know. What do the people in the control room think?
Well,
they say you're wrong. You know. They say you're wrong about the jacket.
Okay, so they do say you wear nipped-in feminine jackets, do they? No, I don't think so. Come on. Come on. Okay, but basically, if you wore a little skirt and a sort of fitted top and you show your legs off, by showing more legs and arms, it will make you taller.
Huh.
Just trust me. I mean, it's really worth a try.
But also, I know... wait a minute. I know you'd also suggest that I wear heels, which I really can't
do. No. Not at all. As soon as a smaller person starts wearing a very high heel, she looks like a small person who wants to be taller, okay? It's much better to have the confidence to wear, you know, a little low kitten heel if you want to be more elegant, or flat shoes. You know, you are what you are, and you should be proud of that. You know, small things are perfectly formed, and you know, for lots of reasons, you're very lucky to be small. But, you know, it's also a question of wearing, I bet, your suits, you know, probably quite dark, and then you'll wear a bright-coloured shirt underneath to cheer it up. Yeah?
Okay, I think you got my MO, yeah.
Okay. So, you know, it's much better to wear one colour and have all the colours merging into each other, because then that, again, will elongate your height. You don't need to wear high heels to look taller. There are all sorts of different tricks.
My guests are Trini Woodall and Susanna Constantine, hosts of the BBC show What Not to Wear and author of the book of the same name. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guests are Trini Woodall and Susanna Constantine. They're the hosts of the BBC show What Not to Wear. It's a makeover show, and it's also shown on BBC America. There's a version of that, an American version, that's now on the Learning Channel. And Trini and Susanna have a new book called What Not to Wear. When you do makeovers of men, what are some of the typical problems you are up against?
Exactly the same as women, but I think the most prevalent one is the beer gut, the big fat stomach that is winched in with a very tight belt, and then encased in a pair of pleat-fronted trousers, which are also tapered, or otherwise shorts, which are of the same shape. And it's a question of getting them into flat-fronted trousers with no pleats that are bootleg, and layering their top half to break up the expanse of stomach that's there. So, but men are exactly the same as women. And some of them even have breasts.
Yeah, and then you have to do the same principle. They have to wear a 2-button jacket and not a 3 or 4 button jacket. It's like a woman wearing a princess collar neckline who's got big breasts, which just makes her one huge breast, or breaking it down with a deep V jacket. Same applies to a man.
So if a man has a big belly, is the appropriate place to put the waist in the middle of that big belly or underneath the big belly?
It's really to give no sense of where the belly is the best solution. Because if you're doing a belt, you're winching underneath and then it just pours over. It's like a woman who's got a belly wearing too tight a jeans. You see it anyway. And if you do it too high, it's like the woman wearing the pleated trousers, which are very high-waisted. So in a way, you wear a trouser that fits smoothly, probably just under the belly, and then over it is, as Susanna was saying, that layering where you might have a t-shirt and then a jumper over, and you show neatly a bit of the t-shirt. So you just break up and you deceive your eye as to where that belly is actually getting biggest.
Now, do you think that people often get stuck on the look that they wore when they were in their teens, the look that was popular when they were teenagers?
I think where people get stuck is the look in the decade they felt happiest. Okay. Uh-huh. And I think a huge era of that is the sort of 60s woman. And you see her today and she still has long flowing hair. She might wear the sort of makeup she wore then, but unfortunately a few more wrinkles have appeared. The garments might be quite flowing, but now she's got a bit of a belly and she should be trying to show off some kind of figure. So you really find that, and when we go through, you know, if a woman's from 30 to 60, you'll find that decade, and we sort of pinpoint it, we say that's when you felt happiest. And in the last series, we had a woman, Sandy, and she had really had a moment in the early 80s, and she hadn't left that moment. And they were, you know, she could hardly walk through the door with the width of her shoulder pads. So it's kind of readdressing and saying, you know, the decade we want to feel happiest in is the one we're living in today, if that's possible.
How did you start the show? You already knew each other and you were friends?
We knew each other and we started a newspaper column in the Daily Telegraph for 7 years, talking honestly about fashion and what was available. And then we did some satellite television for about 3 or 4 years where we did about 200 shows, budget of $500 a show, viewers 7. And then we had an internet company, we had another book, and then we were approached by the BBC to do this show about 3 years ago, and we're in our third series, second book, and a few other things in the pipeline.
Now, why do you think makeover shows are so popular now? Like, makeovers have been popular segments of shows for years, but now there are whole makeover shows. There's yours, there's the American version of What Not to Wear, there's an extreme makeover show, there's a new show where gay men make over straight men, and there's an ambush makeover show.
I think it's that Cinderella moment. You know, every woman wants to, you know, make herself look better and feel better. And I think, you know, as far as the viewer is concerned, they want to see that journey and they want to see someone else transform. But I do believe that very strongly that what we do is very different to the majority of makeover shows. And it's like our show isn't strictly speaking a makeover show. It's more about a kind of lifestyle change as much as it is about clothes, like we were saying earlier. And, you know, we don't put them in expensive designer clothing that they could never afford thereafter. We don't put them in styles that maybe don't suit their lifestyle, like a beautiful velvet coat when they've got a newborn baby that's going to vomit down the back of it. We really consider their lifestyle, and we give them a set of rules and information that will last them a lifetime. It's not just a moment for television. This is a moment that will last the woman a lifetime, and it happens to be very entertaining to watch and interesting because it's an emotional and psychological and cathartic process for the contributor concerned.
Do you ever wish that you didn't care about how you look and you didn't really care about your clothes in the way that some of the women who you do on your show don't really care about how they look or don't really care that much about clothes?
I think every woman cares about the way she looks, and she might not admit it, or she might be in denial, or she might think there are more important things in her life. I think there are very, very few women out there who have the confidence in themselves not to care about the way they look.
Okay. So you're going to go shopping while you're in New York?
If we have time. We haven't really had time. Yeah. We'd love to. But also it's like, you know, now we've kind of saturated our wardrobe with things we can wear throughout our pregnancy, and I think we're just going to rest easy and put our feet up now and just live with our stomachs for the next couple of months or so.
That's Susanna speaking for herself. I, on the other hand, love shopping. Every opportunity, in between every interview, Terry, I'm in Henri Pendel's or down at Zara, or I just like it and will never stop love shopping, I'm afraid.
Well, congratulations to you both.
Thank you so much.
And thank you so much for talking with us.
Well, it's been really great to talk
to you.
Yeah,
really fantastic.
And we have to
thank
do you, Terry. We have to come down. Where are you? In Washington?
Philadelphia.
I've come down to Philadelphia on our next trip, and I think we need to have a little day out.
Well, I'd enjoy it.
You say with trepidation. Yeah.
Well, thank you again. Trini Woodall and Susanna Constantine are the hosts of the BBC's What Not to Wear, which is also on BBC America. Their book of the same name has just been published in paperback.